relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at ReliefFactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Be the next success story. Welcome back to America First with our very special guest, Uncle Jimbo. It's Jim Hansen.
Hey, folks. Happy to be sitting in Seb's chair while he's down at Fort Bragg talking to our special operators. But I am actually happy and sad to be joined by Gordon Chang, because the fact that he's joining us is a sign that, once again, China is doing things that we're doing badly to counter. I want to make sure you follow him on Twitter at Gordon G. Chang. And his book, The Coming Collapse of China, cannot come soon enough. Welcome to the show, Gordon.
Thank you so much, Jim.
Well, look, I think there's plenty. I want to start off in the less obvious of the two really bad things that happened recently. But China managed to get a deal done between our enemy, Iran, and our somewhat ally, the Saudis, for a rejuvenation of diplomatic ties between those two countries. This is barely 2 years after the Trump administration managed to get a couple Gulf Arab states to sign deals with the Israelis to increase relations. Have we really flipped that far, that the U.S. is no longer a power broker in the Middle East and the Chinese are there too?
Yes. Actually, America's Middle East policy under the Trump years was like the best since FDR, but Biden's is clearly the worst ever. And we're seeing that because, as you mentioned, Saudi Arabia was a firm friend of the United States, was supporting our efforts. We had the Abraham Accords, which President Trump should have won the Nobel Prize for.
Yep.
And what Biden has done is he's reversed all that progress in the matter of a couple months. He did that by trying to isolate the Saudis, and this is not a very good story for the United States.
No, and the sad thing is, it's a sign of the entire kind of what I call the cringing capitulation model of foreign policy that Obama started. You know, the idea that America is not the indispensable nation, that we are not in some way the one who should be pushing global policy, but that we should be following the lead of others. And I think they're in some ways happy to let the Chinese do that.
Well, you know, there's a lot to that, because both China is a supporter of Iran and the Biden administration. So Biden is helping China foreign policy in the Middle East, even though most of Chinese foreign policy in the Middle East is directed against the United States. I mean, you just can't make this stuff up.
No, and after one of the things that's been going on long enough that I think people forget, China has done a brilliant job, you know, with the Belt and Road Initiative and their predatory financing for tyrants around the world, their buying up of resources, especially, you know, things that are vital to high-tech manufacturing. And we allowed a lot of that to happen. You know, Trump actually started putting some slowdown to Chinese expansion. But overall, we as a country have done far too little to stop them from becoming potentially the preeminent global superpower.
Yes, and Biden, by being weak, has opened the door to China, and they not only in the Middle East, but also Biden's terrible policy in Afghanistan let Vladimir Putin think that he could invade Ukraine with impunity. So, you know, you've got a war in Ukraine that would have never occurred in the Trump era.
And now we've got Xi and Putin slapping backs, you know, taking long walks through giant halls to get great photo opportunities. But more importantly, probably outlining the peace deal that the Chinese are going to broker between Russia and Ukraine rather than the U.S. Is that something you see as a possibility?
Yeah, I think that China's peacemaking efforts are not going to be successful with regard to Ukraine and Russia for a number of reasons. One of them is that China is not seen as an honest broker by Ukraine, but also because the Iranians and the Saudis felt that they had some interest in a deal. I think at this moment, Ukraine feels it must fight to eject Russia, and Russia thinks that it must annex Ukraine. So that's a zero-sum contest, and neither Ukraine nor Russia really wants to settle. So I think China's vision is going to come a cropper.
Well, and as long as the Biden administration, through their, you know, public policy, is saying things like, we do not support a ceasefire, you know, we are going to back the Ukrainians all the way. And now, do you think the Russians are actually looking to annex Ukraine, or just potentially Donbass and Crimea? You know, the Russian-speaking provinces they hold, Crimea, which they've held since 2014. Isn't that a deal that might be, obviously the Ukrainians don't want it, but I don't know that they can count on support forever, can they?
Well, you know, that's a great point. Yeah, no, nobody can count on support forever. And clearly Biden is just trying to manage the situation rather than obtain a victory. And the question is, which power is weaker, Russia or Ukraine? And there's a lot of learning about that. But the point right now, I think, is that Russia will take what it can get. If it can get only the Donbass and other parts of Ukraine, they'll settle for that. But if they think they can get it all, I think that that's what they're going for, because that was the reason why they had that full-scale invasion.
So do you think Xi went then more for the foreign policy leadership coup as opposed to a chance to actually make a deal? Or, I mean, there is some backroom dealing as far as financial transactions, you know, energy deals and other things that they're doing with the Russians. The Chinese are supporting Russia's ability to prosecute this war, basically, at some level, right?
Absolutely. It's all in. And it's not just the elevated commodity purchases, which are effectively financing the war. China opened up its financial system to sanction Russian institutions. It's putting its diplomats in the service of the Kremlin. Its propaganda is all in on Russia. And there's been lethal assistance from the very first moments of this war. So, yeah, China is the reason why Russia is still able to fight. Take out China, and probably Russia has to withdraw from all of Ukraine.
Is there some sort of larger alliance that they may sign? Is there a deal to be made, or is it just going to be, you know, a little bit of shuttle diplomacy or something similar to that by Xi?
I don't see an alliance. China it does not feel it needs to ally formally with any party. It's only got one formal alliance. That's with North Korea, and it's somewhat embarrassed about that. So I don't see a formal alliance with Russia, but effectively, they are partners. They're very close. They're working hand in hand. So it's like a London alliance. Matter of fact, China and Russia are closer as on an ad hoc basis than we are with some of our formal treaty partners.
Which is horrifying, and I guess it's an idea. So we don't have to actually worry about a Dragon Bear treaty, but the Dragon Bear partnership, you know, as an ad hoc thing is legit and likely to continue.
Absolutely. You know, a lot of very smart people in New York and Washington will say that China and Russia will never be able to have an enduring partnership. And I can agree with that. But I don't care about Moscow and Beijing in the 2050s or the 2060s. I care about what these guys are doing right now. And right now, they are taking apart the world, in part because Biden isn't stopping them.
And he hasn't shown any ability to lead on any foreign policy issue, I guess, unless you count retreating as leadership. And like I said, I think that's part of the concept. I think the Obama idea of cringing capitulation has been the only way he believes that America should act. Well, listen, we got to take a break. But after that, I want to come back with Gordon Chang. Follow him, Gordon G. Chang on Twitter. And I want to talk about the other thing that the Ukraine war is pointing out. There's a little island not too far from China that has a big stake in how that all turns out. I'm Jim Hansen. We're doing America First Radio after the break.
Today, we are partnering with Food for the Poor to provide urgently needed food to some of the most impoverished countries in our hemisphere. Because of interrupted planting cycles, rising food prices, and the lingering impact of COVID, the list of families unable to feed their children grows longer by the day. But you can make a difference to these families. Today, a meal-for-meal match means your one-time gift of $144 provides a family of four with food for a year. That's two meals a day for the next year for a family who struggle to get even a handful of rice or enough corn for a tortilla. Knowing your gift will never have more impact than right now, will you rescue one family, three families, or even 10 families? Go to sebgorka.com and click on the red Send Food banner. Text the keyword G-O-R-K-A to 91999 and you will get a link to make your life-saving gift. Or to give your gift by phone, call my toll-free number, 855-330-4673. Welcome back to America First with our very special guest, Uncle Jimbo. It's Jim Hansen.
Yes, I am Jim Hansen. You can find me at Jim Hansen DC on Twitter. And you can find my guest, Gordon Chang, at Gordon G. Chang on Twitter. And you should follow him because he is an indispensable analyst right now because we got Chinese communist problems and they're not getting better. You should also check out his book, The Coming Collapse of China, which cannot come and collapse soon enough for my liking. Gordon, we talked a little bit about Chinese ascendancy in Middle East, you know, affairs, and obviously their partnership with the Russians and what they're doing in Ukraine. But the 800-pound gorilla in any time we have to talk about their ambitions is the island of Taiwan. And whether or not does the long nature of the war in Ukraine and our large commitment of military, you know, hardware and everything else make them at least consider the idea that we might not have the appetite to defend Taiwan if they made a move?
You know, that's a really important point you make. Well, first of all, we're bleeding munitions, which we should use in East Asia instead of the western part of the Eurasian landmass in Ukraine. But also, it's a question of signals. And what Biden is signaling is he's not looking for victory. He's looking to manage the situation in Ukraine. And that says to Xi Jinping that the United States doesn't have will. So, unfortunately, it is somewhat of a green light for the Chinese to say, well, let's go after Taiwan. And this is something that I think that the Biden team doesn't understand. They make some very short-term decisions. All presidents do this, but Biden does it more than others. Short-term decisions, and they don't understand the consequence that it has on other bad actors.
Especially other bad actors who have a long and well-known ability to play the long war. You know, for us, a long cycle is 24 hours of the news. You know, we don't do strategy in the United States. We do tactics and reaction. And the problem, like you said, is it's not even just that it signals the weakness and the lack of, I guess, fortitude in our foreign policy and our national security. That's the fact. That is literally, you know, if they made the move, I worry that we wouldn't do it. Now, I think that would be a very, very ugly situation because we'd have to have some response. But it also means that there's a chance if they could run the table quickly that we never got there in a way to stop it.
Yes. And I think Xi Jinping right now is extremely arrogant. The words that he said when saying goodbye to Putin a few hours ago indicated that Xi Jinping thinks that he's running the world. And I'm not saying he's right, but whether he's right or wrong almost doesn't matter because it matters what he actually thinks because that's what's going to motivate him to act or not act. And unfortunately right now, he thinks that the United States is done and that he can invade Taiwan or even take on the United States and not suffer any costs. So that is the critical fact at the moment.
Do you think there's any chance? I mean, they're constantly floating the idea of replacing the dollar as the reserve currency of the world. Obviously, we got bank issues going on, and our economy is not doing that great. Is there a chance they can make any kind of a play in the short term to take advantage of that?
can get a little bit of advantage, Jim, but not much, because the problem is the Chinese currency is not convertible on the capital account, and it's barely convertible on the current account. So nobody long-term wants to hold that currency. Now, there are a lot of other reasons why you don't want to hold renminbi, but that is the critical one. So, yeah, China can huff and puff, but people don't want to hold a weak currency such as the Chinese one where they just can't convert it.
And the scary thing is as fragile as our economy may be, it's still much better. So what's a good move Biden could make? What could he do right now to at least show China we have some level of seriousness?
Well, first of all, win in Ukraine. And we can do that because Russia right now, first of all, Ukraine has the advantage on the battlefield. Let's help them win. We help them win. We take down Russia. That makes Xi Jinping think, oh, my gosh, the Americans really are strong. I better not invade Taiwan or some other neighbor. So that's the first thing. And the second thing is, you know, Biden can actually avoid a war in Taiwan by getting behind his desk, having the television cameras there, and Biden say, we will defend Taiwan, and we will impose severe costs on China should you ever try to do anything. That makes the Chinese think twice. You know, if I can go on just for a second.
Very short second.
Trump talked about this. And this is how he stopped the Chinese and the Russians, by making it appear unpredictable and that he might actually go in and do things.
You know, I was going to say, when you said Biden should do that, I said that sounds a lot like a president who's no longer in office. Gordon Chang, author of The Coming Collapse of China, a book you should read. And you should follow him on Twitter at Gordon G. Chang, because he has more of this important information. I'm Jim Hansen. This is America First Radio. We'll be back in a minute.
Did you notice in the State of the Union speech last month, Biden doubled down on his spending plans, adding even more to the federal deficit? That doesn't bode well for the value of your money. Sebastian Gorka here. Biden's disconnected view of the economy means there will be no meaningful steps taken to lessen inflation and lower interest rates. Your cash reserves and investments will be worth less, which is why I recommend calling veteran-owned Midas Gold Group to look into safeguarding your wealth with the stability of gold while you still can. Gold traditionally holds its value when economies fail, guarding against the destruction of inflation and the ruin of a recession. Don't let Biden's misguided economy wipe you out. Talk with the good folks at Midas Gold Group. Go to MidasGoldGroup.com or call 855-322-GOLD. That's 855-322-GOLD. It's gold you can hold. MidasGoldGroup.com, 855-322-GOLD. Welcome back to America First with our very special guest, Uncle Jimbo. It's Jim Hansen.
It certainly is. Hey, every year at this time, as we near the final few days of Seb's spring campaign, we turn to you to help our friends at the nonprofit Christian relief organization Food for the Poor in their core mission to feed the poorest of the poor in our hemisphere, including 17 Latin American and Caribbean nations. Many, many of you have already made heartwarming contributions. But because hunger and malnutrition continue to run rampant in poor nations, I'm asking for your help once more. Just go to the show's website, sebgorka.com, and click on the Give Food, Give Life banner. People like this desperate mother, Norma, in Honduras, count on Food for the Poor to feed their children. And your gift makes all the difference, as you can hear.
Thanking you, the donors, to keep giving us milk or rice, whatever we need in order to have something on a plate. Because at least we have something to eat. You never forget about us. And thank you very much for that. Really. I don't have the words. I don't know how to say. But thank you. God bless you. And please keep helping.
Just $72 provides two children with two meals a day for an entire year. Or $144 gives the same blessing to four starving kids. More than 1 billion children are living in poverty. You could be the answer to their prayers today. Please go to sebgorka.com and click on the Give Food, Give Life banner. Or phone your gift to 855-330-4673 and thank you. Now, I want to bring in a man who I love. Sean Davis, and I mean love in the most deepest man-to-man kind of way. Sean Davis, co-founder of The Federalist. And brother, I heard someone talking bad about you on the Twitters. And I think it was this Senator Cornyn guy from Texas who was hell-bent on running us into World War III by backing Zelensky with everything he wants. And you pointed out maybe that's not the greatest idea. And he called you Neville Chamberlain?
Well, I think the most interesting aspect of that is that we had a senator who was actually able to make a historical reference. So props to him. It's probably the only one he knows.
Right, right. It's on his list of one.
But we should give him a little head pat for that. Yeah, he went after me, called me an appeaser and a Nazi sympathizer, compared me to former British Prime Minister Neville Chamberlain for suggesting, how dare I, that maybe just giving buckets of money to Ukraine forever isn't actually in America's national security interest, that maybe what's happening over there is a dispute that Europe needs to figure out, and that maybe we're actually making ourselves a lot less safe by putting all of our eggs in that basket, sending hundreds of billions of dollars over there, while our own border is completely porous and unprotected. And for that, he went after me, which I found equal parts amusing and just horrifying.
I think I am both amused and horrified along with you. And I think it's the lack of ability to see what U.S. strategic interests actually are. It's easy to hate Putin. He's a horrible guy. He's a tyrant. He's a war criminal. All the things they say about him are true. But that does not mean that we should do everything we can as a country to defeat him. And I think that's different than stopping the war in Ukraine. Why don't we work on stopping it as opposed to this mad, you know, rush to try and defeat Putin?
Well, I think you're exactly right. And it's worth noting, you know, this week is the 20th anniversary of the launch of the Iraq War, which, in my opinion, is a disaster. We did a very, very poor job of figuring out what our actual mission was there. If it was to get rid of Saddam Hussein, they should have gone in there, done it, and got out. Mm-hmm. But instead, you know, we still have troops there.
Right.
We still have, it's been 20 years, and we still have troops there. And it's just fascinating to me that in that Twitter exchange, it was started by Cornyn attacking Ron DeSantis for being skeptical of the Ukraine mission. Mm-hmm. And in using the exact same propaganda that was used on us back in 2002, we've got to fight them over there so we don't have to fight them over here. Okay, is Putin suddenly planning like an amphibious attack, an air assault on America that I'm unaware of? Dude can't even handle Ukraine. So the idea that John Cornyn, 20 years after the launch of the disastrous war in Iraq, which cost us untold blood and treasure, that he would use that same propaganda and not even understand it and trying to launch a new, potentially World War III in Asia and Europe. Like, we truly are led by idiots. They have no understanding of what's at stake here, and it just boggles my mind.
Yeah, and you can give Zelensky credit and maybe an extra Y for his name. I'm up to four Ys when I use his name now because I just think he's that important and impressive a guy. But at least he pays attention to our propaganda and knew how to talk to the American people, saying fight him there or here. But Putin got all his new toys blown up in the opening of this war. You know, that's just it. He's down there literally importing 1950s era tanks to fight the war in Ukraine right now from Russia. I don't think he's much of a threat to even Liechtenstein, let alone us.
Well, you're right. And the big risk to us, there's two. There's an economic risk and there's the national security risk. So, you know, John Cornyn and people who haven't read a book in who knows how long, they constantly look at everything like World War II. They're always the good guys. Their enemies are always Hitler. If we have to have a 20th century historical analog here, it's not World War II. It's World War I. Now, recall that the whole world kind of stumbled and bumbled and sleepwalked into that after Austria-Hungary goes and annexes Serbia. The Serbian separatists don't like that, so a bunch of them get together, and they assassinate the heir apparent of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. So what does that lead to? It leads to Britain declaring war against Germany and Germany declaring war against Russia because Russia is viewed to be allied with Serbs. And suddenly, because of this territorial dispute you have in the middle of that region, the entire world is now embroiled in a war. And it's so similar now, except the much bigger difference is these people all have nukes.
Yeah.
China
people
nukes.
Forget.
Russia has nukes.
Yeah,
that's
I know.
A real danger.
And people, I was arguing with Jim Carafano today on Twitter again, that he said Putin has exhausted his run of atrocities. I'm like, Putin hasn't even opened up his atrocity cupboard yet. You know, yes, he has committed horrible things, but he hasn't gone all the way yet. You know, your World War I reference, aside from being a great historical lesson, and I appreciate that, because it is pretty apt. I hadn't thought of it in exactly those terms. But they are doing trench warfare. They are literally entrenched right now over in the Russian-speaking provinces and lobbing stuff at each other and playing snipers just like we're watching, you know, All Quiet on the Western Front again. Well, hey, Sean Davis, co-founder of The Federalist, follow him on Twitter at SeanMDAV. And he'll be back after the break because I want to talk about Trump. I'm pretty sure they said they were going to arrest him, and I think they might be chickening out. We'll be back. I'm Jim Hansen. This is America First Radio.
In Folsom Prison, and time keeps dragging on. But that train keeps rolling on down to San Antone.
Just when you thought it couldn't get any better, Mike Lindell with MyPillow is launching the MyPillow 2.0. When Mike invented the MyPillow, it had everything you could ever want in a pillow. Nearly 20 years later, he discovered a new technology that makes it even better. MyPillow 2.0 has the patented adjustable fill of the original MyPillow, and now with a brand new fabric that is made with a temperature regulating thread, the MyPillow 2.0 is the softest and coolest pillow you'll ever own. For my exclusive listeners, the MyPillow 2.0 has a buy one, get one free offer with promo code Gorka. MyPillow 2.0 temperature regulating technology is 100% made in the USA and comes with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Just go to MyPillow.com, click on the radio listener square for the buy one, get one free offer, enter promo code Gorka or call 800-829-8468. That's code G-O-R-K-A. Go today. Welcome back to America First with our very special guest, Uncle Jimbo. It's Jim Hansen.
Yes, I am Jim Hansen, and my guest, M. Sean Davis, co-founder of The Federalist. Hey, Sean, we were talking, you know, about the Russians and all that kind of stuff, and I actually think there's a piece of Senator Cordon's critique of you that you missed. He finally dumped the beans on who funds The Federalist.
Oh, yeah, who is it?
Putin. I knew it. I knew you were a Putin stooge, dude.
Everyone knows it.
Well, now it's a fact. But, dude, let's jump. Let's jump quick and have a chat. What do you think they're going to do with the potential indictment and arrest in New York? Are they going to chicken out or are they going to cuff and stuff him?
I haven't heard that rhyming combo before. That's a good one. I think they're going to indict him. This, to me, is the political Democrat version of Chekhov's gun. It says you can't have a gun in a play in Act One if it's not going to go off by the end of the play. You can't dangle Trump getting arrested in front of these Democrats who are just deranged by Trump and not arrest Trump. So I could be wrong. It's happened before. I think they're going to go through with it. They're just trying to figure out their timing.
Interesting. Okay. And Trump kind of threw him a curveball by laying it out there, which that's what he's good at. He's good at both counterpunching and also throwing the first punch and making it look like a counterpunch. So now he also said, you think he's going to go in and get that picture with the handcuffs on and try and be the full-on martyr?
I have no idea. I don't really understand how that process works. But what I will say is everyone wants to talk about the Trump angle here. Trump and Trump and Trump. I find this horrifying for reasons that have nothing to do with Trump or whether you like him or whether you hate him. The Democrats, the left in this country, has declared an all-out war on their political enemies. You can see it in the J6 stuff. You saw it in the Russian collusion hoax. You saw it in how they have tried to go and disbar attorneys who worked for Trump if they said things they didn't like. They're not stopping with Donald Trump here. It's not like they're going to arrest him and say, okay, guys, we won. The war's over. You can go back to it. This is just the appetizer here. Like, we're not even to the entree yet. They would like to do this to all of us. And I hope everyone realizes that and understands what it's at stake here. Because it's not Donald Trump. It's our own kind of existence as a democratic republic where we have rule of law. And that's clearly going down the tubes right now.
I wish you were wrong, but that's something you most definitely are not wrong about. They have thrown the rule book out. I think our buddy Kurt Schlichter, who's going to be on later, always says, I don't care what rules you want to play by, but let's just get them on the table, because you're not going to like it when we start playing by those rules too. And I think it's time, and we're going to have to do that. Thank you, Sean Davis, co-founder of The Federalist, not funded by Putin, at Sean M. D-A-V on Twitter. And read The Federalist. There's great stuff there. Join their community. Do all of it, because they are part of the quality of our conservative media. Thanks for joining us, Sean.
Thank you, my friend.
All right. It's Jim Hansen sitting in for Dr. G, who's down at Fort Bragg talking to the troopies. And we'll be back after the break. And actually, after a little bit of news for you folks, with my good buddy and co-founder of the Warlords podcast, Kurt Schlichter. Can't say baby well, being a year. Nice pennies in me.
Welcome back to America First with our very special guest, Uncle Jimbo. It's Jim Hansen.
I am absolutely Jim Hansen, and I am also the East Coast Warlord. And that's going to become important because I'm about to introduce the West Coast Warlord, my good friend and co-conspirator, Kurt Schlichter. Welcome to the show, buddy.
Hey, welcome. We are between us. We cover the nation with our power and potency.
Isn't that awesome? And the reason that's important is because we just last night dropped the premiere episode of what is going to become the greatest podcast in the history of Earth. It is called The Warlords. And Kurt, the reason that this podcast is launched and is so vital is because the world needs our wisdom, especially America. Without us, they're going to just continue to flounder and fail.
A lot of these people are lost souls in a sea of mediocrity, bobbing up and down, sometimes dog paddling, struggling for air. We are the life preserver for manhood.
Well, we're going to generate taglines. Hey, now there's a guy on the screen who looks a lot like me. That scared me. But dude, I think the thing is, we wanted to do something that was not just more, you know, talking heads jabbering about news of the day. We're taking it one level deeper and worrying and at least highlighting how this is affecting our culture. But more importantly, how are we going to fix it?
Exactly. There's some hands-on stuff here. For instance, yeah, look, a lot of guys in our age grew up and knowledge was passed down, whether it was from fathers or big brothers or uncles or even out on the street. Well, kids don't go out on the street anymore, Jim. They're sitting in their room playing the video machine and watching cheesy pornography. We're not somebody's got to tell these guys how to live. How do you get girls? How do you get a job? How do you not have your life go off the rails? What can you do to make yourself a better person as opposed to, you know, struggling on your back like a cockroach? You just got sprayed with Raid.
And fortunately for America, we're here. And we are riding to the rescue. We are running up the black flag. We are putting the cutlass between our teeth. And we are going to start boarding the woke ships. And then we're going to sink them. We're going to steal their women. We're going to steal their booty. We're going to rape, loot, kill. Well, we're not going to rape. We're going to loot and pillage. You got to watch those.
Look, I'm down with the pillaging card.
There
look,
you go.
Our pilot episode. We talk about wokeness, but it's not more complaints about how stupid wokeness is. We've established that. What do you do about it? How do you live and how do you prosper in a woke society? We give you some advice. Then we move on to, the ladies. How do you deal with women? Now, there are a lot of guys that, don't you hate, you watch these guys, they either never kissed a girl or they're with some like mediocre girl who treats them like crap and they're taking it. They're doormats. They're losers. They don't know how to establish a decent relationship with a high-value woman. They're just failures. And then we talk about something I find very, very important, culture, particularly one of the things we're going to explore is some of the movies that you need to know to be a complete man. The first one is Caddyshack, but I'm sure we'll be hitting things like Zulu and Animal House and The Dirty Dozen as time goes on.
Apocalypse Now.
I've
got an idea for Apocalypse Now.
We'll get Amanda in here. Amanda
Amanda needs to come over. She's been waiting to come watch it. We had fun down at the National Conservatism Conference. She hosted an event where she took her dad's movie, and I'm going to forget the name of it now, the one where Sean Connery was a Berber. And
Wind in the Lion.
Wind in the Lion. Thank you for saving me from that. She actually did a commentary, and we all watched the movie together. And it was so fantastic because she's so much fun and such a good person. So what I want to do is I want to have her over to the house and watch Apocalypse Now in Atmos and then have her comment on the whole thing. So we'll work that out. But that's the point. There's so much good stuff that so eclipses the lameness now. And I think there needs to be a revitalization of that. There's nothing wrong with American men that can't be fixed and American women and American culture. There is something wrong with the people running those things right now. And we aim to fix that.
Exactly. And we're also amusing. We're highly amusing. We're funny.
You crack me up. I crack you up. We crack us up.
Yeah, look, this isn't a Bataan death march of hat cliches and stupid platitudes, okay? The only thing it's missing is some beers, whether alcoholic or non-alcoholic.
You can drink wine because you're in California. You know, I mean, I think that's actually legal. I think aren't men allowed to drink wine in California? They're not in most civilized places. Men are not allowed to drink wine.
I may or may not have a little bit of wine over there. You've been to my house.
You have a lot. You have a nice collection. Yeah, it's well-stocked. With steak, too, which I think is another thing. And then we'll talk about that. Yeah. We will talk about the manly arts of dry aging meat. We will talk about cooking. We will talk about hacking things with axes. All of the things that used to just be common, as you mentioned, in American culture and in the ability of men to go ahead and act like men. There's nothing wrong with that. We're going to bring it back.
It should be encouraged. Yeah. And it's going to be fun. And I don't think anybody else is doing it. I mean, there are plenty of podcasts out there, which we listen to, that talk about, you know, politics all the time. This one, politics is, of course, there because it's part of things, but it's about life. It's about living. It's about testosterone.
And the people who normally end up talking about how men should be manly, and especially, you know, the dude bros who are giving dating advice and all that kind of crap, they're losers. All right. To the extent they have any success with women, they have success with low esteem women with no brains and no quality, and they're teaching dudes how to be jerks. You know, that's not the way to be a quality man. And being a quality man is how you get a woman. All right. Well, they can tell.
Well, look, you must make yourself a high-value man, and you don't make yourself a high-value man by being a loser. You don't make yourself a high-value man by being a guy, you know, who's going to get arrested for something real as opposed to invented. And there's a lot of guys out there who've got a little bit of money, got a little bit of time, maybe they've worked out a little bit, and they're gonna clean up on the mediocre girls. Okay, if that's your scene, you don't need us. But if you're wondering, gosh, how does this stuff work? Well, look, we have a proven track record of success. Our success is out there. Anybody can check out our resume.
Because we're public figures. And the nice thing is,
you know,
go ahead.
If you want a little of the K or J magic, well, we're sharing the secrets.
And that's what you can look for. So I think the fun thing is, I'm going to go ahead and mention now that I'm sitting in a Salem studio, I'm talking to a town hall contributor. Anyone from those organizations who is interested in this, you are the ones who should be pushing this, because this is the kind of content that is going to drive your audiences to the next level. So come with us.
We put it out on Twitter last night, and the response was very, very positive.
Yeah.
People were just looking at it going, wow, this is, you know, I'm never going to miss an episode. So, you know, and you look at some of the podcasts out there that are kind of successful, and you're thinking, yeah, I don't know. But
it, we got a little something, a little more than, oh my God, did you put enough seasoning on your chicken? Hey.
There's a little more to it.
We're
going to
go
that.
Chicken hunting. You know, one of the things I want to do, I want to take people on a cow hunt, because I don't think people understand how difficult it is to stalk and kill the American cow. We'll hunt the Wiley Angus, Hereford.
Oh, if they have a chance, they take us out.
See, they're savages. People don't get it. So we'll find out. We'll teach you how to stalk, hunt, kill, dress, and dry age the American cow.
Yeah, there's lots of little tactics, techniques, and procedures out there. Look, I'm older than dirt, and I've been around forever. I mean, I'm not Biden old, but I'm pretty frusty. And I know some things, and I have a proven track record of success. And I want to share my proven track record of success with you.
And the nice thing is, we will be interactive, because we recognize we are not the only, brilliant, good-looking, entertaining, funny,
potent,
awesome, potent, potentates out there, all right? We realize that the audience is a fount of useful knowledge. And so we will be asking. What we'll try and do is we can announce things beforehand and ask people for their advice and information and input. So it will be an interactive thing. We will bloviate and pontificate, because we earned the right. But so will you.
Yeah.
And that's it. All right. Well, hey, we're talking with Kurt Schlichter, author of the Kelly Turnbull series, Inferno, as you see by his head. And he's working on Overlord, the next one. But get Inferno now. Get prepared for Overlord. Follow him on Twitter at Kurt Schlichter. And we'll be back after the break to talk about whether or not Donald Trump should actually be put in the stocks on the National Mall. I think that's a legitimate thing. This is Jim Hansen. We're doing America First Radio.
Welcome back to America First with our very special guest, Uncle Jimbo. It's Jim Hansen.
Darn tootin', it's Jim Hansen. And I am back with the other warlord of the Warlords podcast, Kurt Schlichter. Follow him on Twitter at Kurt Schlichter with multiple H's. And get the Kelly Turnbull book, Inferno, before he finishes Overlord, in which Kelly Turnbull hijacks a rocket ship and colonizes Mars to beat Elon Musk to the punch. Did you know that, Kurt?
Not yet.
I hacked your computer I inserted those chapters into your draft manuscript. And then I alerted Elon.
Yeah, tangent I didn't expect.
I know. Now, and then I alerted Elon. So you should be expecting a call anytime soon. But look, dude, there's craziness going on. And I want to talk about whether or not Donald Trump should be arrested. Because I think he's not going to be. I think they're going to chicken out. What's your overall feeling about Mr. Bragg in New York?
Well, look, I still think they'll probably indict him on this manifestly fraudulent and unbelievably destructive and lawless claim that ignores things like the law and statute of limitations.
And you're a lawyer. You're actually a blood-sucking parasite lawyer, which was funny.
That's
in the
right.
Comments on the podcast, yes. That was one of the things people said. He may be a blood-sucking parasitical lawyer, but he's funny. And I was like, hey, stop encouraging him,
Yes.
But
yes,
you got a point. This is illegal, and they're going to do it anyway, you think. I got to, just real quick, Sean Davis made a point where he said he considers this Chekhov's gun. You can't have a gun in the first act of the play and then not shoot it. Now, aside from the fact that that's way too literary a reference for me, and I had to actually Google it while he was telling me. But you think that's it? Because they've been talking about it so much, they either do it or the left loses their mind?
Well, look, I keep thinking, is Chekhov going to cap Sulu?
See, that's the kind of reference I can deal with. Chekhov's gun. That's Russian literature, man.
Warlords in the house.
Yeah.
No, I mean, they've raised the hopes, and then Monday this Costello guy goes in. He's Michael Cohen's former lawyer, got a waiver of attorney-client privilege in writing.
How dumb do you have to be to give that to your lawyer to talk smack about you?
I think he probably had to do it as part of the federal plea bargain.
Okay.
Because it's Feds who gave it to Costello. Costello goes, so he signed a document saying I can say whatever I want. okay.
I have right. things to right. say.
Little lawyer advice. Don't ever do that. No, no, no.
Never talk to the cops either when they first come up to you. Okay. Don't talk to them because okay. it doesn't matter if you're innocent. Don't talk to them. Ask for your lawyer.
Hey, officer, I'm very upset by what seems to be happening. I'm going to assert my rights, and I want to consult with my attorney. Please stop questioning me, and you know, maybe we'll be able to discuss things at an appropriate time. But no more questions, please. I'm not making any statements.
Okay, so now that we've established Easy. That Cohen is an idiot and signed a stupid paper, what did Costello say that mattered about that?
Costello basically said he is a complete liar about everything, including the basic facts he testified to the grand jury. Now, grand jury's in there, and it's here in the testimony. Look, the hit on a grand jury is that they will indict a ham sandwich. And the simple fact is, in a regular case, they don't give exculpatory evidence. Now appears there's a bunch of exculpatory evidence that they didn't present. And that becomes a problem that's not a real problem in a normal criminal case. It's a problem here because it's a political case. Now you have a political case that's being made with no attempt to provide exculpatory evidence, which a grand jury doesn't have a right to see, but it's not a normal legal case. It's a political case, and that becomes a political problem. And
so is it a legal problem, though, for Bragg? I mean, he's not in any concern about prosecutorial abuse. No. He didn't have to do it. He's just in trouble because he didn't do it because it's really sleazy.
Exactly. Okay. He doesn't have to make the defense case. But when you make it a political issue, normal people are like, what do you mean you only put in evidence that hurt him and you had other evidence that would exonerate? That doesn't make any sense. You kept evidence from them that their main witness was lying to them, the grand jurors, I mean. That doesn't work well. Even a lot of liberal people are kind of like, you know, I don't like Trump, but that doesn't sound right. And it isn't right.
Well, why did Costello get in there? How did he get in there? Is this the big donut smart. Eater? The donut eating district attorney? Okay.
They thought they were geniuses. Oh, we're gonna bring in this. We're gonna bring in Cohen's lawyer, and he's gonna back up everything Cohen says. He's got a waiver. He can say what he wants. And they bring him in, and he's like, and they were trying not to let, according to what he said on Tucker, they're trying not to let him get to the stuff that hurt. And he just ignored their question and went to the grand jury. You know, this guy lied to me all the time. He was totally lying about everything. And you're the examining DA going,
Isn't that the other rule? Never ask a question you don't know the answer to. Never bring on a witness who you don't know what they're going to say.
Yes, you try not to do that. You also don't want to bring in a witness who's simply going to provide devastating information and isn't going to wait till you ask him a question that draws it out.
That sounds like fun. I mean, I kind of hope to be in that position one time and be saying, okay, here's all the stuff no one's supposed to say, but I'm going to say anyhow, and wait till the judge is going to throw me in for contempt, though, right?
Well, there's no judge.
Oh,
it's
so that's
the
do
DA
it. All right.
The grand jurors.
All right.
It's not a regular proceeding. So you have the lawyer there going, did you know Mr. Cohen? Why, yes, I knew Mr. Cohen, and he lied about everything. He's constantly lying and said he wanted to do anything he had to do, no matter what, to avoid jail. And you're the DA, and you're like, stop doing that.
I didn't bring you in here to remind everybody what a scumbag my main witness is.
Exactly.
Well, I think we're going to find out. I think the Chekhov's ham sandwich, whatever, that's a great mixed metaphor. Chekhov's ham sandwich demands that they go ahead and indict him, but we'll see, because that's due to come. What about, though, is the conventional wisdom right that this helps Trump in the general because all of a sudden he's the victim?
I don't think it helps him. I think it gives him a short bounce. As people sympathize with him, he deserves sympathy. This is a travesty. I don't know if it helps him in the long run.
Well, I think the long run for now is the primary season. And I think the question is, does the abuse of power against him outweigh the idea that people may be sick of a president who's got drama following him everywhere he goes?
They may very well be. They may very well be.
Well, I think that's something we're going to have to find out. Now, Did DeSantis, I actually thought DeSantis was a little funny when he does the whole, well, I don't know, I don't have a whole lot of experience paying off hookers, you know, when he made that comment. Sure. You know, I mean, come on, as much as Ouch. Trump calls him meatball and sanctimonious, I thought that was a decent shot back.
Yeah, no, well, look, you throw a punch, you don't get to set the rules about him punching you back. And Trump lit the fire. I don't understand the idea that somehow he gets to set the, now you got to stop.
Right.
It doesn't work that way.
No, it doesn't. But it's fun. And I think the more these guys engage, the more entertaining it's going to be. And I'm past the point where I think either one of them has to be nice. Go ahead and throw your punches, guys, and we'll let the people vote, and we'll have a candidate to nominate.
Call a primary.
Kurt Schlichter, author of We'll Be Back, a real book, author of Inferno, a very entertaining book in the Kelly Turnbull series, and at Kurt Schlichter on Twitter, also co-host of the greatest podcast, The Warlords. I'm Jim Hansen. We'll be back after the break with more America First.
Du hast mich.
This is America First, and I'm delighted to welcome our special guest host, Jim Hansen.
Hey, folks, good to be back doing America First Radio, and I'm happy to be joined in studio by Horace Cooper, who is chairman of Project 21 at the National Center for Public Policy Research, and who has a book that I can't wait to read coming out that's Put Y'all Back in Chains, How Biden's Policies Hurt Black America. Now, obviously, you're referencing the quote from back when he was doing one of these, I will feel y'all's pain, and speaking in a dialect. But what's the book actually about?
So in 2012, while running for re-election with Barack Obama, what did Joe Biden say? He went to a predominantly black group and said, if the Republicans win, they'll put y'all back in chains. He told Charlemagne the God that if you don't vote for him, you ain't black. Now, I have this book that's coming out on the 4th of July.
Mm-hmm. Perfect.
And its sole purpose is to remind people that the very progressive policies that this man pursues devastate black America. Now, they hurt the country.
Right.
But they devastate black America.
How can you say that? I have been informed reliably my entire life that the left loves black people and they want to help them, and that everything they do is designed to make the world better for black. You're telling me that their policies don't work?
So there's two facts here.
All right.
Their policies don't work, but there's two facts here. Progressives need 80% or better of the black vote in order to stay in power. If they don't get nationwide 80% of the black vote, you see problems. You can't win the presidential race. Mm-hmm. You can't win the governor's race in New Jersey. You can't even win a statewide race in Pennsylvania. You can't win in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. You actually can't win statewide in Illinois. You need 80% of the black vote. And there has been a coordinated effort on the part of the left to scare black America instead of coming up with an election, a policy program that might be interesting, might be useful, might be effective. Nope, we're just going to scare. Now, second data point is this. The high water point for black America's vote for the left was 2008. 94% of black America went wild and crazy in 2008. But here's something the mainstream media doesn't tell us. In 2012, when Barack Obama was reelected, he became the first first president reelected in 100 years who received fewer black votes the second time than the first. George W. Bush received more black votes the second time than the first. Richard Nixon received more black votes the second time than the first. Ronald Reagan received more black votes the second time than the first.
That's obviously counterintuitive, but is it just that people recognized that Barack Obama's policies didn't actually help them, that it was all rhetoric?
Right.
Oh, my God. That's beautiful.
Drilling down even more, and you'll find this in my book, since 2008, the percentage of black Americans voting for the left has dropped every year.
Yeah.
That's 10. That's 12. That's 14. That's 16. That's 18. That's 20. And also in 2022. In fact, yes, our friends in the mainstream media don't tell you this. In fact, there has become a growing gender gap within black America.
I know where you're going there.
Black men are voting far more like white men than any other group in America. And if in 2022, black men and black women had voted the same, i.e., they voted like black men did, what you would have seen is about a 30-seat gain in the House of Representatives. Instead of Fetterman, who doesn't know he's a senator, having gotten elected, you would have seen a Republican win that state.
All right, now, but what do you attribute that to? Because if I was going to, just not having dug into that data, I would say that men overall have seen a backlash.
Yes.
You know, there's been a change, and let's be clear. Men had it way too good for way too long and cheated and abused the system. So there was it was fair to have some pushback. But I think, like it always does, the pendulum swung too far.
150 years ago?
Yeah. And
because in a growing, thriving economic society, everybody has to contribute or we all suffer. People don't point this out about segregation. Segregation created poverty for all the people in the areas where it happened. Not just blacks, for all the people. If you made dresses, or you ran a dry cleaning service, or you sold cars, and if there was a policy, like when my grandfather was a kid, no, you can't buy a Cadillac, you can't buy at this dress shop, that dress shop owner suffered. I need to sell 30 dresses this month, but I can't sell any to blacks, so I'm only going to sell 22 dresses this month. My great uncle, when he was told he couldn't buy a Cadillac in the state of Texas, he took a train up to Chicago, Illinois, and went to a dealer there. So if you're a dealer in Texas and you're not allowed to sell as many Cadillacs as there are buyers, guess what? You don't prosper. It's not just the people who were by their race who were denied, everyone is harmed. And now economists are saying that one of the reasons that the South has grown and thrived as much as it does and is in fact the growing engine of America is because it's a place where anybody can go and operate and have opportunity. But during segregation, it was the opposite of that. And that's why houses in the South were on average smaller. Incomes in the South were on average smaller. All across the board, when the government limits your ability to let whoever brings talent to the table, you all suffer.
So could we see then black men and hopefully black women seeing opportunity outside of Democrat-run cities? Because that's part of it is you've got, you know, this idea that you've got black communities there, large populations, but there's no opportunity because the policies of the Democrats have driven them down so far that they can't do anything. Are they going to then, in the way that a lot of the rest of us have seen a tribalization, a left and right tribalization, not a black and white tribalization, can we at least hope that that is a one aspect? Because I would love to have productive black people of any kind in Republican areas.
We're increasingly seeing a world of an America of have and have nots. We have these elites on the coast. They're overwhelmingly white, but more importantly, they are elites who do not share the values of the nation at large. Mm-hmm. And many black men are looking around and asking, why is it that you're getting to push through policies that take away my hope and my dreams?
Right.
Why can't I build my own house? Why can't I subdivide this lot mm-hmm. and put two houses here? One for mom and dad and one for me and my family. It's because leftist policies say, oh no, we're going to have a minimum of a 3-acre, 4-acre lot here because we don't want all of this collapse. Well, who can afford that?
Right.
High income people. Our president, Mr. Biden, also wants you to either be an employee, most likely unionized, or a person who receives a check. There's a world of difference right. between those two. God bless you. You want to go join a union? Go join a union. You want to be an employee? Go be an employee. But if you want to start your own affair, you want the gig economy is disproportionately operated. Look at the data. Mm-hmm. I'm not making this up. I'm telling you what the census data shows. And it shows black men are overrepresented. 6.9% of the economy and about 19% of the gig economy. But what does the Biden administration want to do?
Crush
the ability for you to be your own boss. You need to be someone's employee.
Or
boy,
on the government.
As the president would say.
We are talking with Horace Cooper, chairman of Project 21 at the National Center for Public Policy Research. And he's got a book coming out on the 4th of July, Put Y'all Back in Chains, How Biden's Policies Hurt Black America. I'm Jim Hansen. We're going to talk some more about how to make this, how to make the Republican Party more welcoming and America a better place. Because I don't care what color you are. I care whether you're a good person. That's what really matters. Back after the break.
Welcome back to America First with our very special guest, Uncle Jimbo. It's Jim Hansen.
Hey, folks. Jim Hansen. I am sitting in for Seb. I want you to go to Twitter, at Jim Hansen DC. Check out the Warlords podcast, the premiere episode, because it's money. But I want to get back to talking about money and prosperity and security and how a life can be improved in this country. What makes it better? Is it the government or is it you? And we're talking with Horace Cooper, who is chairman of Project 21 at the National Center for Public Policy Research. I think we talked in the break here about how systemic racism gets blamed for whether or not black people succeed in this instance. And I think it has overshadowed in a lot of cases the fact that in far too many cases it's people responsible for their own stuff. Now, I'm not saying that systemic racism doesn't exist. I'm saying that the idea that it's responsible for all disparate outcomes for the black community is, as we discussed, a lie. But what do we do about that? How do we overcome that belief and get people to look at opportunity rather than whether they're being held down?
All right. So first thing, I do want to push back a little bit.
Okay.
The idea that a few people that are so ashamed of their thoughts, they have to hide behind a white cloak that's got a cone head on it, are in some way affecting the outcomes of millions of other people who don't share their ideas and values is ridiculous. The Ku Klux Klan does not decide who gets admitted to community college, to undergraduate state schools, or even to our elite institutions. The Ku Klux Klan doesn't run Coca-Cola. It doesn't run IBM. Mm-hmm. It doesn't run Facebook. The Klan and the corny people behind them have no impact. If you want to go and work at Facebook, or if you want to go and work for Microsoft, and you're 9 years old, let me tell you what I recommend that you do. Math. Science.
Learn to code.
You, absolutely. And you control that. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you something. If you're the smartest and you're the brightest, you look around, the folks who really are interested in acquiring talent, they're looking for you. Mm-hmm. So I wanna say this. Merely because there are some people in America or on this planet who don't like me or who don't like you, that's no excuse for what ended up happening with your life. Personal agency is, what are you doing? What are your mom and dad doing? It is clearly the case that a mother and a father who are paired for a decade or longer end up producing and creating wealth. And the children that are formed when living in that have a huge advantage over those that don't. What the clan or what someone who doesn't know you and doesn't think you're the smartest or the brightest think about you is absolutely irrelevant. Personal agency. Mm-hmm. In America, this is the place, whether you're black, white, brown, whatever you might be, if you have an idea of something you want to accomplish, America is the place to do that. And to be born black in America is to be the biggest lottery winner for a black person anywhere on planet Earth.
There's pretty much nobody emigrating away,
right?
To
right.
say, no, I really need to do this elsewhere. Okay, so I think your point, though, especially, you know, the number one indicator for childhood success is a two-parent household.
Yes.
And that's a pathology in the black community. And I think that's a deep, hard issue.
Government policy that pays people,
Uncle
rewards
Sugar.
People. Now, the abortion, one of the things that I point out in my earlier book, mm-hmm. How Trump is Making Black America Great Again, his pro-life stance. Mm-hmm. If abortion on demand, which disproportionately affects blacks. People do not realize this. Black Americans are only 13% of the population. They're more than 40% of those who are aborted. If black America was not had its population devastated in a way that racist Margaret Sanger
right.
could only dream of.
Founder of Planned Parenthood was basically a believer that you wanted to weed out undesirables and thought that poor people, and in that case, since there were a lot of poor black people needed abortions yes. to do that. Horrifying.
Black Americans would not today be the number three largest group of ethnic group in America. Black Americans would be a number two.
Wow.
That would come with the political clout. Now, there's an example I want to give you. Black Americans are not number two in the state of California. They're not number three in the state of California. Hispanics are number two. Asians are number three. Black Americans wow. are number four. There is talk about what the political possibilities in California are. Well, let me tell you what. When you're in the number four ethnic group, you move to the back of the political bus.
Yeah.
That's coming for black America nationwide. The progressive policies of unlimited immigration, of job destruction, mm-hmm. and wild payments that yeah. give you the distraction. Don't pick up new skills. Don't become self-sufficient. Have destroyed black America in the state of California. That's coming nationwide.
They want clients for the welfare
Absolutely.
State or whatever flavor of that you want to be. They need people to be dependent on that. So what's your, you know, we got 2 minutes. What's your recipe for success if the Republicans want to appeal to those people who want that prosperity and security?
So I'm not interested in partisanship. I'm interested in America. And
Better.
In America, this is a place of great opportunity. During Donald Trump's presidency, mm-hmm. more blacks got new pickup trucks in their front yard or their driveway. More blacks got their nephew, their son, their grandson, off the couch and into their own apartments. More Black Americans went on their first vacation in a 10-year period. Under Obama, we invented staycation. I'm broke, I got some time off, but I can't go anywhere. More Black Americans see the prosperity that just happened, and it is accelerating, along with the large number of Black Americans who are on social media saying many of the same things that I am saying. Mm-hmm. We're going to get that number really quick, under 80%. In the next 4 to 6 years, that number is just going to keep dropping. Mm-hmm. And when it reaches 65, it will be devastating for the progressives. When only 65% of Black America is voting for them, they can't get elected dog catcher.
And they should not get elected dog catcher, because even the dogs suffer under that regime. You can't name a Democrat-run city that any person would choose to live in if they didn't need to. Horace Cooper, Project 21 Chairman, National Center for Public Policy Research. Look for his book coming out July 4th, Put Y'all Back in Chains, a Joe Biden quote, How Biden's Policies Hurt Black Americans. And let's find people who have policies that help Black Americans and all Americans. Pleasure talking with you, Howard Horse.
Thank you.
Back after the break.
Every night when we leave the holiday, I'll see you.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.